Talk given Friday, 21st September, 1973. We touched upon certain quite important topics at our last meeting. And it seems to me it might be the right time now to go very deeply into the innermost possible reality concerning the religious life, which is tied up fundamentally with man's fulfillment on this planet. A certain visitor to the Buddha, called Satchaka, he was a Jain, used to come and ask him questions. And on one occasion, the Buddha said to him, "People think that when I give a talk, I'm speaking specially for them. Each one thinks that I'm speaking specially for him, in answer to his unspoken questions, perhaps." And he says this in connection with giving a talk to a large number of people. And he goes on to say, but this is not to be understood in that manner. The talk is for general instruction. After the talk, the Buddha goes on to say, I steady my mind, make it calm, and enter into that state of meditation which is the first fruit of voidness, in which I constantly abide. This is one of the most significant statements ever made by any of the great founders of the religions. Let us try and penetrate into this. This state is called the Shunyata Phala Samadhi. Samadhi, the state of communion, or if you like to use the old-fashioned term, concentration or meditation, which is phala, the fruit of shunyata, the emptiness, the void. What precisely is this state void of? This is the question, which is the first question that should be asked in this connection. It is void of all greed. It is void of all malevolence. It is void of all illusions. And therefore, the person who is in that state is one who, to use the Buddha's words again, is not liable to delusion. Now, if he enters that state, which is void of all the defilements of the mind, it means that the mind is utterly pure. And the pure mind is one which is uncluttered by any thoughts, ideas, beliefs, particularly with any rigid conceptions, beliefs, and so forth. It is void, certainly, of all neuroses, all psychoses, all complexes, and so on. It is void of fear and ill in any shape or form. But if the mind is void in that sense, then the person who is in that state is totally free of any sort of isolative self-consciousness. The whole sense of I am as separate from the rest of the world is absent. This is the fundamental meaning of being in communion, that although one is a particular self, unquestionably, that particular self never obstructs the unitary wholeness of the total reality which contains that particular self. Now look, this is what each person has to realize, make real in his or her own life. This really sums up, as far as I can make it sum up, the goal, the purpose, and the way by which the total reality comes to full fruition through each individual as a man or woman. So this is the meaning of that very innocuous sounding phrase, I enter into the state of concentration which is the fruit of voidness. And this he calls only the first fruit of voidness. Let us look a little bit deeper into it. And please, as I am talking, do try and really get the feel of it with your whole being. Don't merely believe the words I say. Don't let the mind feel perplexed about it. If the brain says, well, I don't quite understand this, never mind, leave it, but just try and be in rapport, pay attention, in the real sense. This universe is a creative pulsation which is ceaseless. It is a pulsation which through the ages has been called a life-death pulsation. Instantaneous, immeasurable, in the immediate now. I prefer to call it not life-death, but life-other life. We must not take the word life in its very restricted biological sense, but in its whole sense, which includes transcendence itself, just as in the Chandogya Upanishad, you get that marvelous statement, just three short sentences. Brahman, the ultimate reality, is prana, life, this pulsating life. Brahman is the infinite, the not finite, therefore not subject to birth, death, as we understand birth, death. Brahman is bliss. Now this creative pulsation is a life, other life pulsation. And I'll try to explain why I use the term other life. Life, as you and I can be conscious of it, is in terms of manifestation. This is what you and I here, alive on this planet, are conscious of. Particular manifestations of life. Whether it is life manifested in human beings, in animals, in plants, in stones, in the air, in so-called inorganic matter, etc., etc. But life is everywhere. It is right through the entire universe. So, we know life in terms of particulars because we function in terms of our sense activities plus our speech faculty, which gives names to whatsoever the senses convey to us, and our discursive mind process, which makes a coherent pattern of all our sense impressions. So you see, we are constantly aware in terms of separate particulars. But we as we are not conscious in terms of unitary wholeness. We do not enter into that state of communion which is the fruit of voidness. Now, all the separate particulars, whether they be humans, animals, stones, stars, anything you like, all of them are, we can call, beings. Just for convenience, we'll use the one word being to represent all of them. A dog is a being. A tree is a being. You and I are beings. You see? The manifested is what we call being. Now, where does this being come from? What does it emerge out of? Finite, particular, limited being, and the innumerable countless beings that make up this universe, all come out of, obviously, that which is non-being. Is it not? That which was not makes an appearance as a separate particular recognizable as such. It came out of the non-separate, the non-particular. The non-being. But do remember, the ultimate real, the totality, is both being and non-being. So you see the movement of life, the pulsation. Life, other life. Life, other life, pulsation. This one other life, this one and only non-being, the non-finite, the not measurable, the not particular, the not characterized by this, that, or the other particular characteristic, precipitates into manifestation as innumerable beings, And this is the pulsation between being and non-being. That is why I call it life, other life. I don't call it love. Life, death. I'd like you to appreciate this point because, as far as I'm aware, this is a new statement of the one and only old truth. Truth is neither old nor young. It everlastingly is truth. That's that. But it is important for us in our era, in this 20th century, and particularly now, to understand this. This pulsation of life, other life, between innumerable beings precipitated by the one and only non-being, and the return of each being into the total non-being. But in that returning into non-being, it loses all identity. You know, this was the thing that even the Buddha, as far as the written records go, could not or did not explain. He taught there is no such thing as survival of personality in any shape or form. And also he taught there is no such thing as annihilation. You know, great scholars have spilt bottles of, or rather used up bottles of ink trying to explain these things. But I don't think they have ever really succeeded in making it lucid. But become conscious this way, and you will get the pulse. Get the pulse of it. You breathe in, and then you breathe out. Alright? When the one total reality is breathing in and becomes itself, the one non-being, the non-finite, the unmanifest, the imperishable. And when it breathes out, lo and behold, all sorts of wonderful things appear, and that is the universe, including you and me. Now this creative pulse cannot be characterized at all by any of our nouns or adjectives or anything. We may use them just in order to give the mind a stimulus towards understanding. But remember, it's merely a stimulus. Any particular shape that the mind will manufacture will always be inadequate. What I've just tried to put forth is itself inadequate, and everlastingly must needs be so. I've used this simile dozens of times before. I can't measure the volume of the Atlantic using my teacup. It's like that. But try, and you can realize it in awareness. It is experienceable, but not statable. Because statement must necessarily mean limitation. But the experiencing that kind of awareness, where totality completely supervenes, is possible. If it weren't possible, these teachings could never have come down to us. I today couldn't talk at all about them if this weren't possible. Now, relate this to the earlier part with which we started. It's the fruit of voidness. It is that state of awareness, that state of communion, which is the fruit of voidness. The voidness of greed, hate, delusion, fear, any sort of ill state, whatever it may be. It is also void of all that we, in our ambivalent sphere, normally call the good qualities and the virtues. They are not there. You see what has happened to you? In that state, you are dealing with power. Electricity is neither good nor bad. Electricity is neither afraid nor courageous. None of our terms apply to it. It just is an energy. That's that. God, the ultimate, whatever you like to call it, is the supreme absolute energy, power. And you are at one with it in that communion. Now you see what's happening. In that state of communion, the ultimate power, whatever it is, whatever transcendence is, now functions unhindered through you. Naturally you will ask, well then how does it function? What happens? It brings the human race to fruition. You and I are alive by virtue of this mysterious energy, life, which functions through us. It is not by virtue of our skill or grace or goodness or our vice or badness that we live. This lives. We know certain manifestations about the manner in which we live. But what we know is an infinitely small fraction of the total thing which is life. We must get a sense of that totality. Feel its power. But do remember, I've said it over and over again, power is inevitably and invariably misused until there is the harmony of love and wisdom. And the harmony of love and wisdom comes only on the basis, the absolutely indispensable basis of pure morality. Look at all the great religious texts. What did the teachers teach fundamentally? Speak the truth, do no harm, etc. Just the simple moralities and no nonsense about it. If that isn't there, we bring trouble upon ourselves when we handle power. We are constantly playing with fire. And we are so clever, and therefore so wonderfully unwise, that we never learn by being burnt once. Twice, three times, 10 times, 1,000,000 times, until finally we are dead. No, but this is the sad part of human life. We are so willfully stupid. So do remember that, the indispensable basis of morality. Now, if you sense, if you can really get into harmony, even for a fraction of a second, with this creative pulse of life, other life, through your being there will come flooding that which we call transcendent love, wisdom, goodness, truth, use any word you like. They will flood your being, and in that flash you will suddenly experience divinity. You will know as an absolute fact that transcendence is embodied in every single atom of your being. your body, which is not merely this thing which the world calls the body, this physical body, separating it from the mind. Your body is that, of course, and also it is everything else simultaneously. But we are unawake to that. We don't know it. What do you think Jesus meant when he said, "Eat of this, for this is my body"? If you want to take it at its transcendent level, he was speaking of what the Buddhists call the Dharmakaya, the body of truth, Dharma, Kaya, the body, the incarnate reality. That's what it means. We are all incarnate reality, aren't we? So even if once we experience, we are touched by that transcendent reality, and in the deeps of our consciousness and awaken to it, then virtue in its supreme sense is suddenly in your being, and you know it. It gets covered over next moment by this stimulus or that stimulus. And it gets covered over because the preliminary foundation was not attended to. The preliminary foundation of perfect morality. And then we feel pain and go through agony. Why? Because we tried to be good. Then we complain. I'm trying to suggest the way in which karma, in its transcendent sense, works through everything. The word karma itself means this creative action. That is the fundamental karma, the fundamental action, this creative pulse of transcendence itself. Now, if this life, other life pulse works through one's being and one suddenly awakens to it, you will understand in a flash what is the true meaning of those realities which have been put into these words, rebirth, karma. They talk of rebirth as the corollary of karma. But unless one understands and, best of all, experiences this reality of karma, which is this creative pulse, then we will invariably produce all the wrong pictures, the wrong conceptions with respect to the word rebirth. You look at Jesus' statement to help you to understand the Hindu-Buddhist ones. Just as the Hindu-Buddhist ones enable you to understand the deep things Jesus said. And this applies to all the great teachers. You enter the kingdom of heaven only because you are born again. What is this new birth? It is the birth in the innermost depths of your consciousness. It has nothing to do with the reappearance of an identifiable entity. Consider again this pulse of being, non-being. When being disintegrates and disappears into non-being, that disappearance is total. It's total and absolute. The relative, which is the manifested, which is the coherent pattern formed by the combination of duals, loses its duality and returns to its pristine oneness. But in the return to pristine oneness, all separate identifiability is gone forever and ever. Do try and understand this, because it will make a very great difference to life, our daily life. Once we really understand this and see that there is nothing for me as a separate entity, nothing to gain, nothing to achieve, nothing to attain. It is this mysterious thing, God, transcendence, Brahman, call it what you like, with its unspeakable creative pulsation, which just produces these phenomena called human beings and so forth, and through them works out its will, its great power. Otherwise, if we don't understand this, you and I try to oppose it. You know what happened to the little boy who tried to carry the elephant? That's what happens to us. We are crushed by life. If I really see this, I become free from all self-orientation. And if I do become free from self-orientation in the real sense of the word, then I no longer squander my energies incontinently, unchastely, in all those pursuits which are directed towards gratification of my desires, my passions, my whims, my appetites, worst of all, my ambitions, and goodness knows what not. You see, all, do remember, it's only the transcendent, which is the answer to everything else. We seek the solution of our problems, which we ourselves raise up by some sort of limited procedure with a limited objective directed towards our own benefit and good. There is no possibility that way. The only result of all that is failure. Make no mistake about it. Deadly failure. We may have a pleasant life. We may enjoy lots of pleasures, amass wealth, have a good time, all the rest of it. But we have contributed to the ill of mankind and of the world. We have done evil. And the evil that we do works in our own being perpetually, immediately, in this very instant. If I feel a hateful feeling, a feeling of rage and anger, if I direct cold-bloodedly malevolent thoughts here, there, or anywhere, there are immediate chemical reactions inside my own being. There are immediate electrical impulses going from my brain throughout my body and producing their appropriate result. This is how karma works. I am my karma. My karma is me. They are not two separate things. But you will never see this. You may perhaps see it logically, simply because I say it, or you may believe it simply because you have some trust in what I say. That's the wrong way. See it, really sense this pulse, being into non-being. And if that is the case, and this is going to go into complete non-being, which is life, which is eternity, not annihilation. You see? If I see that, then that's the end of my self-seeking. You see, it is you who are happy then and at peace. It is you then who can carry the cross of the world's suffering. You may wonder why I use Christian phraseology so much. I'll tell you simply why. With one exception, maybe two exceptions, the rest of you are all born in this country, aren't you? Or, well, I mean, of a European Christian culture and heritage. Now, don't think that our culture and heritage are some sort of extraneous something. Not at all. They are us. If you are born English, you are born English and Christian. And Englishness and Christianness is embodied in every blessed cell of your body. It is a power. It is a force. It has to be rightly utilized. You see why I am not specially in sympathy with casting aside one religion and taking another. Why do I cast aside one religion and take to another? Because the other satisfies me. Now, I am sitting in judgment. Oh, what a wise and omniscient fellow I am to sit in judgment upon the truth of transcendence as it has been bequeathed in different parts of the world in different forms through the perfected holy ones. I must be a super perfected, super holy one to sit in judgment on them. You see, we are so conceited, aren't we? And you see, that way, there is no love. If I reject my heritage, if I cast it aside because it hasn't satisfied me with all my defilements, my little greeds and stupidities and incapacities and all the rest of it, if I do that, isn't that an act of hate on my part? But if I go out in friendliness, with an open mind and an open heart towards all religions, all right, that's a different matter. Going out open-heartedly towards everything and giving yourself to it, not seeking something which satisfies you, then, yes, you are in communion. You never fall out of the state of pure love, and that is the state of pure wisdom. And it is only that sort of thing which spells the release of true happiness, true stability inwardly. And it is that way that the solution to all your problems in life will emerge. We all have our sorrows, every one of us, our difficulties. We try to solve our sorrows and difficulties in terms of our conceptions, which are invariably misconceptions. But let this deep understanding, this attunement with the transcendent reality take place, and then miracles take place. Somehow the circumstance changes, and so forth. And as you observe it changing, and even before you observe it changing, beware, do not try to bring about a desired result. That is the way of failure in the true sense. That is the irreligious way. Let life, in its infinite wisdom, open out before you. Everything happens in the ripeness of circumstance. And it is I who am the little worm that prevents the apple from becoming ripe and remaining a whole apple. I am the little worm that gets inside it and spoils the apple in the process of its ripening. Selfness. This isolative selfness, this attempting to draw the world unto oneself and keeping it there, instead of letting the truth, the reality, enter into you freely and flow out freely. Perhaps you are beginning to understand what I mean when I say I care for your happiness. It is in this sense. It must of necessity always be centered in the transcendent, in the infinite, in the reality, whatever that reality may be. I can never know it. Knowledge in the ordinary sense inevitably implies I, the subject who is looking on at some object, know that object. But it implies a fundamental duality. I am always separate from it. We start that way. With anything and with everything, with anybody and with everybody. There is no possibility of avoiding that start. But having started that way, let life work itself. And let this isolativeness in consciousness dissolve away. And this is where the deep and real meaning of the teaching about mindfulness, about attentiveness, paying attention comes in. When you really pay attention, there is no separative self-consciousness interfering with that attention. You may ask, well, how do I, is there some sign by which I may know that it was a case of real attentiveness? Yes, there are signs. You will find yourself completely absent. I mean, you will find that there is the complete absence of all calculation, all talking back at what you are observing, and so on. There'll be no criteria, no judgments. You know how in ordinary life, a beautiful young woman falls desperately in love with the most awfully ugly, bulky, burly man, who is rough and this, that and the other. But when she is really like that in love, she totally gives herself. And in the giving, there are no criticisms, no judgments, no demands. It just happens, just like that. This total givingness of the self. Unto Caesar, yes, calculate. Penny, 10 pence in the pound, 100 pence in the pound. Yes, calculate. Where Caesar is concerned. But where God is concerned, I have nothing whatsoever. Because the total, my total being is given up. That's that. And I don't even know that it is happening. This is love. And it is love at peace, not love aflame with desire. And in this sort of living, there is total attention. The real total attention. Now, this creative pulse that we have been trying to consider, in this creative pulse of life, other life, all that is expounded as the metaphysical aspect of the philosophies of religion, you see, is all present simultaneously in actual activity. The word karma itself simply means action, creative action. And it contains within itself this extraordinary reality which has been wrongly pictured as rebirth. Rebirth, reincarnation, and so forth, all imply the persistence of entity. But if you really get the sense of this pulse, you will see that entity disappears. There is manifestation, non-manifestation, manifestation, non-manifestation. But totality can neither increase nor decrease. It is the same. So now, where is our picture? You see how futile our pictures are. And you see how futile. That's on the Hindu-Buddhist side which we have been talking about. And take the monotheistic religions which talk of the perpetual heaven or the perpetual hell nonsense. They are equally idiotic. Because they imply the perpetuation of finite entity, which is not possible. Where creative pulsation is concerned between being and non-being, it's just not possible. You see, I can sense your difficulty. Don't stretch your intellectual muscles to grasp this, to be at one with it. Let your spiritual being, embodied in your very physical existence, just open out into it. Stretch that way. Because the intellect must of necessity make limited, finite pictures. All the words I tell you, all the thoughts I give out, are only limited, finite things. They belong to the realm of death. But that which they are trying to convey, this intense life that they are trying to convey, is the immeasurable total life. This way will come release. For each and every one of us. Now you see why another person can't do it for you. Just as I can't eat or drink on your behalf, I can't realize truth on your behalf. Because you are the living being. You can't live by proxy. You can't use me as a proxy to live by. You have to be alive. You see how different, if one gets this sense, how different the whole situation becomes about goals and procedures and ways and means and so forth. What is necessary is to set one's sights correctly. And if one's sights are set correctly, then you steer the right course. Never ask another person, to what shall I set my sights? Or if you ask, yes, I will give you the answer, transcendence. Then you say, but what is transcendence? I don't know, nor do you. I never will know with the brain, nor will you. But if this feeling out of the heart, which is formless, which is non-finite, unrestricted, which is of the nature of transcendence itself, will go out to transcendence, the miracle will take place. You see how near nirvana is. It's nearer to my being than my own body. How near the kingdom of heaven is. It's here now. So you don't have to fight to be virtuous. Because the virtue for which anybody fights is only half the story. And it is an illusion. The opposite vice is the other illusion. And these two illusions between them make us have a devil of a time in life. Because the conflict is set up in my own being. So now, let the mind dwell quietly upon this. This is something very, very important which we have tried to look into tonight. But it goes right to the very heart of things. You will discover the truth of what I have said time and again, that your power of attention is your instrument of salvation. And if you let that attentiveness be there, undisturbed, or shall I say, with the mind void of any greed, any anger, any illusion, and so forth, then yours is nirvana.